From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. ExxonMobil, climate change, and the impact of possible regulation. Those are the issues at stake in a New York courtroom today as the energy giant faces charges that the company kept two sets of books when it came to informing investors about how future climate regulations might change its business. Yes, the heart of this case is about climate, the planet, and therefore all of us. But as an aside, if you have any investments in an index fund, say through your 401k, you're also very likely to be an investor in Exxon. Now, state officials have tried to sue energy companies on climate issues before. They've almost never been successful. Could this latest salvo be different? This hour on Point, the ExxonMobil climate trial. And you can join us as my guests today explain what this trial is all about. We'd love to hear your questions and reactions. Are you glad to see state law enforcement take on the fossil fuel industry? Do you think they're overreaching, maybe? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Well, joining us today from New York is Nicholas Kuznets, reporter for Inside Climate News. He's covering the Exxon climate trial, and you can find links to his stories at onpointradio.org. Nick, welcome to On Point.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. And also with us from San Diego, California, is David Hasmeyer, also a reporter for Inside Climate News. David was part of the investigative team that published a series of stories in 2015 called Exxon, The Road Not Taken, about how ExxonMobil's own scientists in the 1970s warned about climate change caused by fossil fuels and how the company buried the results. That series was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize, and we have a link to it at onpointradio.org. David, welcome to you.
Thank you. Pleasure being here.
And I also want to let listeners know that we did indeed reach out to ExxonMobil to see if they could send an official to join us today. We also reached out to the American Petroleum Institute. Exxon never replied to our request, and the American Petroleum Institute turned down our interview request. But we do have a statement from Exxon, which we will dive into momentarily. But first of all, Nick, let me ask you, because this case has been years in the making. It's now in civil court in New York. Just lay out for us, what exactly is New York accusing or alleging Exxon to have done?
Sure. So, parts of the allegations are pretty technical and arcane, and we can get into some of that. But in essence, they're accused, as you said, of misleading investors about how they were accounting for the risks that they face from climate change regulations. And it all revolves around one of the ways that Exxon and many companies try to manage risk when it comes to climate change, which is through something called a proxy cost. This is basically a way to put a number on how much the company or consumers will have to pay to emit carbon and other greenhouse gases, say 20, 30 years down the line when there's policies like carbon tax or cap and trade systems, any kind of suite of policies that are aimed to limit emissions and put a price on carbon.
Okay. So first of all, let's dig into that a little, because we do have this statement from ExxonMobil, and it's quite lengthy, but the company says, for example, quote, "The New York Attorney General's case is misleading and deliberately misrepresents a process we use to ensure company investments take into account the impact of current and potential climate-related regulations," as you're saying, Nick. But then it goes on to say that ExxonMobil applies proxy costs and greenhouse gas costs precisely as disclosed and takes both into account to make sound business decisions and meet its fiduciary responsibilities to shareholders. So outright rejecting that they've done anything wrong.
That's right. Yeah. And I mean, we can get into some of that, but I think it's worth just stepping back for a second and looking at sort of what this means, and because what Exxon is accused of had real-world effects. And it's also important to say that so Exxon doesn't dispute that it had, as you said, sort of two sets of books, that it used different costs for different purposes. So the dispute comes in whether that was misleading and whether it was legitimate. But in a sense, or in essence, what the Attorney General's allegations are is that Exxon told investors that it was putting a high price on carbon, that it was, assuming that regulations would be pretty stiff and that the company would have to pay high prices in the future, when in fact when it was evaluating its investments, it was putting a much lower price and, in effect, assuming that regulations wouldn't be as stiff. So what this means is that one place to look for the real world impacts are in Canada's tar sands or oil sands.
I'm glad you're getting to this because, to be perfectly frank, Nick, I've been struggling with this for a couple of days about why it is that publicly saying carbon's going to cost them more and privately saying it's going to cost them less actually was potentially bad for investors. So do walk us through the tar sands example in Canada.
Sure, sure. So first, this is the tar sands or oil sands are, it's a huge store of low-grade oil in Alberta in Canada. It's one of the largest single stores of oil in the world. But it's not even technically oil. It's this mix of sort of sand and low-grade hydrocarbons. And it takes a lot of energy to turn that into a crude oil that you can put in a pipeline and send to a refinery. So because it takes a lot of energy, it's very expensive to produce, and it releases a lot of greenhouse gas emissions. It's one of the most carbon-intensive and expensive sources of oil on the planet. And Exxon is a major investor and producer there. So the effect of having these two different sets of kind of assumptions for carbon prices was that what the AG is saying is essentially Exxon was saying to investors, hey, we have this very high price of carbon that we're assessing our investments on. And an investor might then assume, okay, look, these investments are still sound. Exxon is saying even with this high price of carbon, this risky asset in the tar sands is still passing the test and it's going to be a profitable venture. In fact, though, Exxon was applying a much lower price, so it wasn't being quite as rigorous or as cautious as investors may have believed. At least that's the allegation.
I see. Okay, so I want to dig into a couple more details with you, Nick, but stand by for just a second, because David Hasmeyer, let me turn to you here. I think this is a good moment to sort of set this all in the broader context of Exxon's history with the issue of climate change, which you've reported rather in extreme detail here. So how do you look at this sort of double accounting, which Exxon says is perfectly legal in terms of its approach to climate for decades?
Well, truly, the path to the New York courthouse begins decades ago, back in the mid-1970s. Exxon had a very robust scientific arm. They had scientists who were doing all sorts of research. And as scientists, they began to realize that there was an increase in atmospheric carbon dioxide. And the scientists, being scientists, asked themselves the question, why is this happening? And is there a connection to burning fossil fuels? They set out that thesis and set out to explore it. And early on in the mid to late 1970s, these Exxon scientists began to understand that, yes, burning fossil fuels is contributing to the increase in atmospheric CO2. And is what atmospheric CO2? It's the greenhouse gas that traps heat and is the primary cause of global warming. So Exxon scientists knew that burning fossil fuels was a huge contributor to this and went on for a number of years to do tremendous in-depth research. Exxon teamed with academia and the U.S. government, the U.S. Department of Energy, to kind of have a trio of scientists to explore this question.
Mm-hmm.
And by the late 1970s and the early 1980s, Exxon knew that burning fossil fuels was largely one of the large contributors to atmospheric CO2. And in fact, in the early 1980s, one of the Exxon scientists in a CO2 position paper that was prepared internally for Exxon executives indicated that there could be wide-ranging and potentially catastrophic events that must be considered in connection with burning fossil fuel and its connection to rising atmospheric CO2.
How catastrophic were they predicting?
They were predicting that the CO2 in the atmosphere could reach as much as 415 parts per million by this time, by 2020. And they're right. It's today at 414 parts. So their science was pretty well right on. They were also predicting increase in average global temperatures. And they've been right about that.
Wow. Well, in their statement, David, Exxon says that ExxonMobil believes that climate change risks warrant action, and it's going to take all of us, business, governments, and consumers, to make meaningful progress. We're focused on reducing our emissions, helping consumers reduce their emissions, conducting breakthrough research into lower emission technologies, amongst other things. And yet they find themselves in court right now on this civil action here. I mean, how does their double accounting of climate impacts sort of factor into their overall approach? We got about 30 seconds before we have to take a quick break, David.
First of all, let me acknowledge that, yes, ExxonMobil today does acknowledge that climate change is happening, and it's happening because of burning fossil fuels. But we have to go from today, again, back decades to have a complete answer to that question.
Okay, well, David, I'll ask you to stand by here because we just have to take a quick break. We'll pick up that thought and exploration when we come back. We're talking this hour about ExxonMobil in court in New York facing civil charges regarding climate change and misleading investors. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about a remarkable case taking place today in a New York court. ExxonMobil is facing charges that it misled investors on the potential impact that climate change regulations could have on its business. Now, on the face of this seems like a business case, but really it's a case about energy companies and climate change and to what degree or what responsibility they should hold. And I'm joined today by Nick Kuznets. He's a reporter for Inside Climate News. He's covering the Exxon climate trial. David Hasmeyer also joins us from San Diego. He's also a reporter for Inside Climate News, part of the investigative team that published a series of stories called Exxon, The Road Not Taken, back in 2015. It was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize. He also co-reported the Dilbit disaster inside the biggest oil spill you've never heard of. And before the break, David was talking about the decades of research that Exxon had on climate change, research done by its own scientists. So I just want to play a moment from a 2015 documentary filmed in collaboration with Inside Climate News. And you're going to hear Edward Garvey, an Exxon researcher from 1977 to 1982. And Garvey recounts how the company's own scientists were doing serious research into climate change. And here he is.
We were doing some serious science. It was a significant budget, I would say on the scale of $1 million a year. And that was a lot of money in 1979. We were generating what we thought was state-of-the-art information. We were doing science that we didn't think in any way, shape, or form would be questioned. And there was no questioning that the atmospheric carbon dioxide was increasing, that atmospheric carbon dioxide was going to change the climate in some fashion. The question was how fast, how much, and what kind of impacts would it have?
That's Edward Garvey, a former Exxon researcher in a 2015 documentary. We'll get back to the specifics of the case going on today in a New York court. But David, you said that understanding Exxon's history regarding its approach to climate is really critical to understanding the significance of this court case today. So tell me more.
It is, because as Garvey said, Exxon understood the consequences. Exxon understood what was in large part driving the change in climate. What Exxon then made some choices decades ago, and it's those choices that are basically on trial today in the New York courtroom. Exxon had the opportunity back in the early 1980s when, as Garvey said, there was a good scientific understanding of burning fossil fuels and the consequences of burning fossil fuels. Exxon at that point had the opportunity to begin thinking of and making investments in alternative energy sources. Alternative energy sources that, had they been employed 30 or 40 years ago, in all likelihood would have had a tremendous effect on what's happening today. So Exxon made choices. And in this case, Exxon decided that it wanted to continue with its business model, developing its fossil fuel reserves and driving energy through burning of fossil fuels, as opposed to identifying and developing alternative energy sources.
Huh. Well, Nick Kuznets, let me turn back to you here because, again, I just want to remind folks that we did reach out to ExxonMobil and request that a representative from the company join us in this conversation. We didn't hear back from them, but they did send us a statement, and we'll continue to dig into that. But, Nick, in this trial today, I mean, given what David has laid out here for us, tell us, is former Exxon CEO and former Secretary of State Rex Tillerson expected to testify in this trial?
He is expected to testify. Both of the parties have called him or have listed him as a witness that they plan to call. And, you know, one thing I wanted to add, too, after what Dave's been saying, is that the history comes into this from another angle, too, from the oil sands, which get a prominent role in the complaint that the attorney general has filed against the company. So, and this goes back to the 1990s, really. This is when Lee Raymond was CEO. So this is Tillerson's predecessor. And the company and all the global investor-owned oil companies like BP and Shell, they were under a lot of pressure at that time, particularly because of the rise of state-owned oil companies. So a lot of the reserves that these companies had historically relied on in the Middle East, parts of Africa, were becoming off limits as countries nationalized their oil. And so one of the few big exceptions to that was right here in Canada in the oil sands. And Exxon actually had a competitive advantage there because it has a controlling stake in a big Canadian oil company. So Raymond began, and then Tillerson continued, a real turn towards oil sands, pouring billions of dollars into the resource, to the point that now it's about a third or almost a third of the company's oil reserves. So an important point is, you know, as I was getting at earlier, there's a lot of energy and costs to exploit the oil sands. It's really one of the riskiest assets for an oil company when you're looking at a future of lower oil demand and limits on carbon emissions. So as one advocate who I spoke with told me, if you're taking climate change seriously as an oil company, these are exactly the kind of investments you wouldn't be making.
I see. So, David, I was actually just going to turn to you and ask you that question. Is that the bigger context here, that Exxon, given its own research several decades ago, had an option to fundamentally change its business, but didn't, and so therefore we see its continuing investments in things like the oil sands in Canada?
Correct. And what's interesting about that time frame that Nick has been talking about is that Exxon, along with other fossil fuel companies, Shell, BP, they began to develop a strategy of pushback against the climate science. It was about that time in the mid to late 1980s that the world as a whole began to understand the future and the consequences of global warming. And kind of in a predecessor to the Paris Climate Accord, in the late 80s, there was the Kyoto Protocol. It was basically an international agreement that was committing countries to reducing greenhouse gas emissions. So all of a sudden, Exxon and the fossil fuel industry began to see this growing momentum toward combating global warming and CO2 emissions. So Exxon, along with these other oil companies, began to fund and participate in organizations that would essentially try to dissuade any sort of legislative efforts to control greenhouse gas emissions, because those kind of controls, that sort of legislative action, could have a negative impact on their business.
Mm. Well, Nick Kuznets, the reason why I brought up or asked if Rex Tillerson is expected to testify is because I'm seeing here that he is quoted in the Wall Street Journal as saying that this allegation of how they accounted for the potential cost of future climate regulation, he says it's, quote, an academic debate. What does that tell you?
So one of the pieces of evidence that the attorney general has cited in its charges against the company was an email, among others, where one of the company's corporate planners said that Rex Tillerson was happy with how the company was applying these different carbon estimates. So the evidence suggests that Tillerson was aware of and approved of the practice. Then in a deposition he gave, however, to the attorney general as part of the investigation, he said he didn't really recall approving it, and also said that, you know, he wasn't questioning his colleagues saying he had, but if he had, it must have been kind of a minor point because he had no recollection of it. So I think what he's trying to say is, you know, this is kind of a technical matter that has to do with the way the company runs its business and accounting, and it's not this kind of big conspiracy, right, as the attorney general is alleging, a way of cooking its books.
Right. So I mean, I think this gets us to one of the perhaps the strongest pieces of pushback against the New York Attorney General. I mean, first of all, this has come through several New York AGs. We should note that. It's been going on for several years. But Exxon, in its statement, it's very clear. Exxon sees this as a political exercise, this lawsuit, right? It says, quote, "It's been well established that the New York Attorney General's investigation and resulting civil lawsuits were politically motivated and resulted from a coordinated effort by anti-fossil fuel groups and contingency fee lawyers involved in other lawsuits against the industry," end quote. That's from Exxon here. But I want to play a moment from a March 2016 press conference from former New York AG Eric Schneiderman. He stood alongside former Vice President Al Gore, and this is when he announced the charges that led to today's trial.
There are companies using the best climate science. They're using the best climate models so that when they spend shareholder dollars to raise their oil rigs, which they are doing, they know how fast the sea level is rising. Then they are drilling in places in the Arctic where they couldn't drill 20 years ago because of the ice sheets. They know how fast the ice sheets are receding. And yet they have told the public for years that there were no competent models, that was the specific term used by an Exxon executive, to project climate patterns. And we know that they paid millions of dollars to support organizations that put out propaganda denying that we can predict or measure the effects of fossil fuel on our climate.
That's the former New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman in 2016. Now, Nick, the reason why I wanted to play that is because at heart, I mean, this is what, these are the big concepts on trial here. But the legal case is, it is quite a technical one, like you said. I mean, I just wonder, is this because state attorneys general have tried before and have had a difficult time being successful suing energy companies? Is this kind of an Al Capone scenario where you get them on sort of financial technicalities and not on the big picture problems that these companies have introduced into all of our lives?
It's a good question. I mean, I don't know that I can give a satisfactory answer, but I can't say that when the Attorney General in New York started this investigation in 2015, you know, a lot of people sort of assumed that it would be looking at what Exxon knew about climate science and what it was saying publicly. But I guess it's not entirely surprising the way it took, because the stock market is in New York, there's a state law that gives investigators and prosecutors very strong powers and wide latitude in looking at stock fraud and shareholder cases. The Attorney General has used this law before against energy companies. It reached a settlement with Peabody Energy a few years ago. And so in a sense, it's not entirely surprising, I guess. The Massachusetts Attorney General, which was investigating sort of parallel to New York, just recently Bloomberg reported that the Attorney General there informed Exxon it's going to be filing charges too. So we'll have to see whether those are very similar to New York's in that they rely on this sort of accounting and shareholder fraud, or whether it's a little bit broader.
Okay. Well, David, I'm going to come to you in a second, but I have been making our callers wait here. So let's first go to Carl, who's calling from Lone Rock, Wisconsin. Carl, you're on the air.
Hi. I was calling to just remembering back to the 70s at a time when I was trying to start a solar heating business in the small town that I'm originally from. Back then, ExxonMobil was actually taking out full-page ads in the Wall Street Journal against Sunday, which was kind of a promotion of alternative energy. And their ads basically said, why not a coal, oil, and gas day? Just a comment from how long they've been working against alternative energy.
Well, Carl, thank you for your call. David Hasmeyer, you want to comment on what Carl said?
I mean, that is one of the pages out of Exxon and the industry's playbook to attack alternative forms of energy. And that was certainly the case in the 1980s when the industry and Exxon had the opportunity to develop a roadmap that could have included alternative energy. In this case, Exxon and the industry decided not to go down that road. There is one thing that I would like to circle back to, and that is Exxon's position that what is happening in court is politically motivated. Mm. Exxon has been making that, taking that position since Eric Schneiderman and Maura Healey began their investigations, the respective attorneys generals of New York and Massachusetts. Exxon, once the two attorney generals made it clear they were investigating through delivering subpoenas to Exxon, Exxon immediately went to court to seek an injunction to stop the investigation. At multiple points throughout the court process, Exxon has lost with that argument. And in fact, about a year and a half ago, a federal judge in New York dismissed Exxon's attempt at blocking the investigations. And this particular judge, in her decision, wrote something to the effect that nothing can be read into Exxon's argument that there was a political vendetta against Exxon.
Hmm. Well, we are talking about a trial going on today in a New York court about ExxonMobil and whether it misled investors about the impact of climate regulation on its business. Of course, the bigger picture is the role that energy companies have been playing in climate change. I'm joined today by Nick Kuznets and David Hasmeyer. We'll be back. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, the Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about a remarkable case going on today in a New York court where civil charges have been filed against ExxonMobil, alleging by the New York Attorney General that Exxon misled its investors about the impact of climate regulation on its business. Now, that seems like a financial technicality, but really what's at issue in the court is the role of energy companies and the impact they have had on climate change around the world. Yes, we did reach out to ExxonMobil to see if someone from the company could join us today. They declined and sent us a statement instead. We also reached out to the American Petroleum Institute. We were unable to get anyone from the American Petroleum Institute to join us. But I am joined today by Nick Kuznets. He's a reporter for Inside Climate News. He's covering the Exxon climate trial. David Hasmeyer also joins us as well. He's a reporter for Inside Climate News. And his long-term reporting on Exxon has been named a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize. That was a couple of years ago, and he has stayed on top of this story for many years. So let's go to our callers. Let's go to John, who's calling from Portland, Maine. John, you're on the air.
Hi, Meghna. Hi, guests. This is a great topic as far as I'm concerned. Years ago, I was part of the legal team that sued Exxon over the Exxon Valdez oil spill. And I looked at thousands of pages of Exxon documents. And perhaps relevant to this discussion, I already knew about climate change, and apparently some people at Exxon did. But in these documents, there was almost no discussion of the environment at all. You know, they're spending all their time talking about finding, exploiting, shipping, and getting to market oil. Mm. And so I'd have to assume that the discussions were between the scientists and upper level management. And then I have to wonder, with these people who are all very well compensated, like Lee Raymond, like Rex Tillerson, what are they thinking about the future of the climate and you know, the world their ancestors, their children and their ancestors will live in? It baffles me to this day. They must be very wealthy people. Mm. Is that good enough? You know, I can't imagine that Rex Tillerson is that much happier than I am today or many other people who don't have nearly the assets that he
right.
has.
Well, John, thank you so much for your call. And I'm going to take your two points kind of in reverse order here, because first of all, you wondered what Rex Tillerson might think. I mean, we got sort of a little bit of insight into that back in 2017 when Tillerson interviewed for before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee during the confirmation process for him to become Secretary of State. And he was asked in that confirmation process about climate change. And here's what Tillerson said in 2017.
I came to my personal position over about 20 years as an engineer and a scientist, understanding the evolution of the science. Came to the conclusion a few years ago that the risk of climate change does exist and that the consequences of it could be serious enough that action should be taken. The type of action seems to be where the largest areas of debate exist in the public discourse.
It's Rex Tillerson, former Secretary of State, former CEO of ExxonMobil in 2017. David Hasmeyer, do you want to comment on what Tillerson said there? What insight does it give you?
It gives me the insight that Exxon executives, their thought process was very slowly evolving. And I don't want to hazard a guess as to how or why it was evolving, but you go back to the mid-1990s when climate change was truly recognized as a threat to the world. And at that time, Rex Tillerson's predecessor, Lee Raymond, began the sowing seeds of doubt by essentially saying that the science is inconclusive, admitting that there is something happening, but they don't know what or why. Mm. And when the true scientific consensus, even from Exxon's own scientists from decades before, were directly attributing global warming and climate change to burning fossil fuels. And the head of Exxon, again, one of the world's largest fossil fuel companies, says something to the effect that, let's agree, there's a lot that we don't know about how climate will change, and we need to understand the issue better. Mm. And basically saying, we've got plenty of time to figure that out. So the assault was a very subtle assault by sowing the doubt that there remained questions. And so I hear a little bit of that in Mr. Tillerson's statement.
Yeah. Well, let's go to Lincoln, who's calling from Wheelock, Vermont. Lincoln, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. My statement and question is that why do we, first of all, it's pretty sad that it takes a financial situation to bring this to the light. And I know you touched on that, and that It's sad, you know, that what is being done to this world by these petroleum pigs that lie, cherry pick their scientists. I'm so sick of hearing about their scientists they have, and they cherry pick them, and they cherry pick they suppress their stuff. You know, if you look at the cigarette industry, and you look at the oil industry, the cigarette industry had to come forward and say yes, it's very harmful to whatever, but They put these mundane, benign messages, and it's just not good. They're ruining this world.
Yeah.
And they keep now they're starting to say, yeah, okay, great. So if you can't beat them, join them. Mm-hmm. So that they're joining and saying, okay, yes, this is what we're doing, but they're not doing anything. Yeah. They're just blowing smoke. That's all they're doing.
Well, Lincoln, thank you for your call. Nick Kuznets, let me sort of piggyback off of Lincoln's sentiment there and ask you to theorize with me a little bit. Because as far as I can see, it's been exceedingly rare that climate as a central issue has actually made it to the trial stage in U.S. courts, right? I'm seeing here Michael Girard, who's the director of the Columbia Law School Sabin Center for Climate Change Law, says this is only the second time a case has made it to court where climate change is the central issue. Second time in U.S. history, Girard says. So given that, this is a significant case. Theorize with me, though. If Exxon is found guilty, it's a civil case. It has to do with the company's fiduciary responsibility to its investors. What impact would a guilty plea have? Or I'm sorry, a guilty verdict have?
So, I think that it's safe to say, you know, that this is a hugely significant case because of what you mentioned, its role. I mean, there was one other case. It was different. This is the first kind of these kind of major cases where energy companies are being sued by, the state in this case, right? But the state of Rhode Island and more than a dozen cities and counties around the country have sued Exxon and other energy companies trying to get them to help pay for the costs that they're facing to deal with flooding and extreme heat. The effects of climate change. So, this case is not a perfect allegory to all of those. There are also other shareholder suits. But I think it's safe to say that whatever happens in this courtroom will definitely have an effect on all these other cases because it is the first one that will get a verdict.
Right. But just to be clear, I'm recalling New York, San Francisco, and a couple of other cities, perhaps the ones that you mentioned, they actually have tried to sue in federal court to recoup the costs of rising sea levels, for example, or global temperatures from energy companies. But most of those cases, if I recall correctly, federal judges have just tossed them out. They haven't brought them to trial.
Well, most of the cases were filed in state court, actually.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And there's a reason for this. But a lot of them, then what happens is the cities or the jurisdictions sue in state court for the most part, and then the energy company immediately moves them into federal court. There's precedent in federal court that makes the cases really hard lift for the cities all the entities that are suing the energy companies. State courts, both because of precedent but because of state law, are kind of a much better venue for making the case on these. Mm. So and courts have split. So in a couple of cases, federal judges have dismissed the cases, as you said. But in a lot of other cases, actually this is happening as we speak. There have been several rulings over the past few months where federal judges have said, yes, these do belong in state court, and have sent them back. And the energy industry is fighting viciously about it. I just saw today on my way here, there's a case in Colorado where Suncor and Exxon, the two companies that are being sued there, have appealed to the Supreme Court in a rare kind of legal maneuver to try to get the case or try to stop the case from proceeding in state court.
Well, David Hasmeyer, does this case have any possibility of changing Exxon's business practices? Because it seems to me one of the main challenges that we're all facing here is that so much of the impact that fossil fuel companies have had have come through their largely legal business practices. So what effect could this case have?
I think it's not only this case, but it is what the future of energy holds that is going to change the Exxon business model and change the business model of the fossil fuel industry. I mean, quite frankly, burning fossil fuels as a primary source of energy is no longer sustainable. And at some point, these energy companies will make that turn and understand and realize that they need to explore alternative sources of energy. So it's not only in the courtroom, it's in the communities and in the world where alternative energy sources are truly the future.
Mm. Well, let's see if we can get at least one or possibly two more calls in before we run out of too much time. Let's go to Hart, who's calling from Baltimore, Maryland. Hart, you're on the air.
Hi. My concern is that it does seem extraordinarily political, and I think both people that are that believe in climate change and those that oppose it, both seem to believe that. They talk more about trying to change the behavior of Exxon, as the panelists have here for the most part, as opposed to what the injury is to the shareholders. I don't really think this is brought to protect shareholders. I think shareholders have derivative suits and the like in order to protect themselves and are quite capable of doing so. And I just don't see an injury here, and I think it's extraordinarily disingenuous to claim that this is somehow to protect shareholders.
Mm. Hart, thank you so much for your call. Nick Kuznets, do you want to respond to him?
Sure. I'm not going to sort of defend the attorney general's filing a case, but one thing I will say, and this actually gets to your earlier question too, which is that I think more and more there's an awareness both from sort of the advocacy world but also the finance world of the financial risks that we're facing from climate change, both sort of the physical direct impacts of flooding, extreme heat, and all of the implications of it, but also for an oil company, say, the risks of not being able to continue their business as they're planning. So one of the things that could come out of this suit, for example, if the judge rules against Exxon, is an agreement on how the company would need to disclose, you know, what impact some of the changes that we're expecting to see would have on its business. And there's been a big push to have better disclosure from not just from energy companies, but from the corporate world in general on what they see coming. Because I think there's a growing awareness that if a change is going to happen in terms of transitioning the world away from fossil fuels, a lot of that needs to come from the financial sector. And so what information they're getting from companies, because they're going to be driven by profits. So they have to see what kind of an impact all of this will have on companies' profitability.
Let's sneak in one more call. Let's go to Nate, who's calling from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Nate, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for having me. I was going to bring up the people who are directly affected by global warming, like the people that lose their homes to floods and fires, and how I would hope that they have a long series of lawsuits over that against fossil fuel companies who are dumping their costs on these people.
Yeah. Well, Nate, thank you for your call. So David Hasmeyer, that gets us back to a point that Nick Kuznets was making earlier, that we do have other cases against energy companies in the pipeline. Are we likely to see even more going forward?
Oh, I believe so. The Attorney General for the District of Columbia is on record as saying they are developing a lawsuit. So, yes, I think you will see more. And you'll see it coming from, you know, large counties and areas, urban areas like the District of Columbia, and you'll see it coming from the smaller cities like Imperial Beach, California, which has a population of about 15,000 people and an annual city budget of $37 million, in which the city predicts that against sea level rise alone would far exceed their annual city budget. So I suspect, yes, there will be more to come. And these cases, as they progress through the courts, will become more and more focused, and the issues will become more and more paramount.
Hmm. Well, David Hasmeyer, joining us today from San Diego, a reporter for Inside Climate News, part of the investigative team that was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize for their reporting on Exxon, The Road Not Taken. David Hasmeyer, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's been my pleasure.
And Nick Kuznets, reporter for Inside Climate News as well. He's covering this Exxon climate trial going on in New York. We've got a link to his and David's reporting at onpointradio.org. Nick, thank you so much for being with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And once again, folks, just to remind you, we did reach out to ExxonMobil and the American Petroleum Institute to see if either organization could offer someone to join us today. We never heard back from Exxon, and the American Petroleum Institute turned down our interview request, but we do have that statement from ExxonMobil. It's at onpointradio.org. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.